this recording here, it should say recording. Super. Hi Sabrina, thank you very much for having this chat with us only 24 hours after your little jog across the country. Thank you very much for coming. And firstly, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm feeling all right actually. Yeah, recovery's going very well so far.
Good, good, good. And for those of you who've been hiding under a rock over the last 12 months, do you want to just give us a little bit of a summary of what your background has been and where you've come into ultra running, and also what you've been up to over the last 12 months?
Well, that's a lot. From when I started ultra racing?
Yeah, just a bit of your background, because you didn't come straight into ultra running, did you?
So I did some adventure racing. I did adventure racing for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I think, I can't remember, we've lost a year in our lives, all of us, just now. So I think it might be 6 years that I've been doing ultra races. If I have a cough, by the way, it's not coronavirus, it's asthma.
That's okay.
Not that you can catch it through the computer anyway.
I don't think we can get a Zoom transmission.
No. Although, you know, computer viruses.
There we go.
So I digress. Yeah, okay, so my running, I started with the Grand Tour of Skiddaw, whichever year that was. I'm not very good with dates. Right. But roughly around 5 or 6 years ago. And then I think like a lot of people heard of this UTMB Lark and thought, oh, why not? And then I found out about this point system. So I think in 3 months, I managed to get all the races for the UTMB points, which ended up with me entering last minute random race in Poland.
Okay.
I want to say Poland.
You can say Poland if you like.
But that's not right. Maybe I'm not very recovered from my running.
Anyone would think you're a little bit sleep deprived, Sabrina. So we'll say Poland. Okay.
Poland.
If you want it to be in Poland, that's absolutely fine. So should we skip forward to this year and I'll give you some prompts?
Yeah. I really don't think I'm doing it very well. Oh dear, I think you best not record, you best not have that.
We can edit bits out, don't we?
Thank you. You could show it to people. No, you shouldn't. It's not funny.
Okay, we bring you back to the last 12 months. So I'm going to take a drink. What are you drinking?
Oh, tears in my eyes. Hang on. I've got a tissue now. Oh, this is too funny. Right, Colin. You made me cry.
That's good.
Right, I'll get a tissue.
It's my job.
Right. No, I started thinking too much about that, about Poland, where this race was, and then I couldn't remember the capital or where I flew to. So I thought, let's not go down that race.
So we'll have a little pause here. Put that bit out, and then we'll start. Okay. So Sabrina, it looks like you've had a busy last 12 months. Can you tell me some of the races you've been doing in the last 12 months?
Yeah, I don't think we did any races. Oh, no, the last race I did, we did manage to get one in this year, was the Spine, Winter Spine, which, that was good. I can't say that I ran it spectacularly. I hobbled a lot of it, but I got it done.
I saw you at various points hobbling, and you were hobbling quickly. Good. So I believe you did it in 108 hours and 7 minutes.
Yeah. Well, actually, you helped me, didn't you? You helped me stuff my fat foot back into that shoe. Didn't really want to go in there.
That's right. At Annie's house at Garrigill.
That's right.
At that point, you'd run from Edale all the way to Garrigill without a sleep, over Croxwell, and you were coming down. So a little bit sleep deprived, although you felt you were fine. You were fine. So you went on to finish in a fantastic time there. Any memories that stand out from the Spine race?
Oh, well, that one, Annie's house, come on. That was amazing. I think that's the attraction of the Spine races. why you keep, well, I would keep going back to why others are so addicted to it, because the people involved in it, all the, you know, the marshals, the safety teams, the just the fellow competitors, it's very friendly, a really nice atmosphere, completely non-commercial. I had a fantastic time, and yeah, you just literally, I finished the race a few hours later, I'm like, oh, when can I do this again? There's something but, unique about it.
So the answer to that was January this year. That was your plan to run it.
Yeah.
This January.
Would have been now February, maybe. We'll have to see. Yeah. But yeah, back to the point. There hasn't been races going on. So what did I do? Well, I've wanted to do the Wainwrights for 6 years.
Do you want to explain to people who are listening who don't know what the Wainwrights is?
Oh, yeah.
What the Wainwrights is?
Yeah. So this chap, Wainwright, who probably wasn't... I don't know that we would have got on, actually, really.
Quite a grumpy fella.
Yeah. Grumpy, pompous, had his own ideas about everything. But anyway, he walked up a lot of hills in the Lake District. He drew a lot. He sketched the summits. He dictated to everyone where the summit actually was half the time. Wrote loads of lovely books, which actually really good, helpful guides. But he one set of books includes 214 so-called Wainwright tops. And they're in a collection of six of them on areas, based on the areas. Anyway, I have the little collection, seven books. I had been inspired by Steve Birkinshaw. That's when I heard about this Wainwright's round, when Steve was doing it, and that was 6 years ago, 2014. He did it in 6.5 days, roughly, going around them, and I was just so jealous. I thought, it's really cool, what an amazing journey, but didn't have the capability at that point to do that kind of running, or knowledge of the fells, to be honest. And we'd only just moved to the Lake District about a year before that. And Steve actually stopped in at our house en route. And I was even more annoyed because I wasn't there. I was working in London. I was still commuting back to London to work. And so I didn't even get to join him on his round.
Right.
But my husband did. So he supported him out of Langdale on that leg. I decided that I wanted to do it at some point. And then finally my moment came.
So just to put this in context, it is 326 miles with 118,000 foot of ascent in the... And
you will know better than me.
I've got a piece of paper in front of me.
There you go.
With that on. So how did that go?
Oh, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I could have had better weather. That would have been nice. I'd originally wanted to do it in May, ended up doing it in July. So July is a bit wetter. The fern is a lot higher. So May would have been a better month to do it. But it was fine. I had to delay the start by 3 days because of weather warnings, flooding, torrential downpours, high winds. So I did delay 3 days. But once we got going... It wasn't brilliant, but it was doable in that weather. But again, an excellent team of people supporting me. So, you know, and you can't do these things alone. The logistics are incredibly complicated. I mean, I spent a good few months sorting out the logistics of who was going to help me where. And especially because I was doing it during this whole pandemic. That we couldn't have too many people in any places. We needed to be socially distanced, blah, blah, getting people back and stuff like that.
I know people like Damien Hall and John Kelly are very fastidious about their planning. It sounds like you are as well.
It depends. So for the Wainwrights, absolutely, because there was a target. Well, first of all, when I wrote my schedule, I needed to figure out how fast could I do it. And I wanted to challenge myself. I didn't just want to do it. I wanted to do it in a particular time. So I had wanted to do it in under 6 days. And I like to think it's possible, but it wouldn't be easy. You know, it wouldn't be a walk in the park. It would have to all go well. So in order to do that, I needed to be absolutely bob on with the logistics. So yes, I spent ages planning that. But then, for example, the coast to coast that I just ran, that was like, oh, well, it just takes as long as it takes and it doesn't really matter. And I didn't spend any time on the logistics. And the schedule I bunged up in about 5 minutes. And it's quite ironic because I finished 2 minutes or just under, or a minute quicker than my scheduled time.
A minute and 22 seconds.
Yeah, so that's quite funny.
So in future, perhaps you shouldn't plan them at all.
Yeah, I should just throw it on a piece of paper. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And in terms of the Pennine Way, because I managed to support you on the last leg of the Pennine Way, which was great fun for me.
Oh, but you were there much more than just the first, that leg. Yeah, but you were there from, Bellingham? You weren't at Bellingham.
Yeah. So from there, moving down south. So why did you go north south? That's the question everyone's being asked.
Because I'm an idiot. I'd done the spine already, so I'd already done it from south to north, and I don't like to do things the same way all the time, so it gets tedious. And I knew I was doing the spine again, so I thought, well, actually, let's do it from the other direction. Mm-hmm. But also, the only good reason for going north to south is to do the Cheviot section while you are fresh, because and also the next section. So those first two sections, you don't cross any roads. You can't get any support in the middle of the section. You are out in Cheviots until you get to Burness. So if you are doing that at the end of 268 miles, it's going to take you longer as well anyway, because you're slower at the end. So you might be on it for, I could have been there 8-9 hours with no additional road support or help. And it's fine if you've got really good, strong paces, you can carry an awful lot of stuff. But in case you need something at the end, what if you had foot care needs or something that you needed some extra support? You wouldn't get it. And, it probably would be fine. But it's a bit easier on the last bit of the Pennine, where if you're doing it the other way, when you get into the Peak District, I mean, there's road crossings, you can see someone every 1 to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So you can easily get stuff in. You need a quick massage, you need this, you need to change your clothes, you need a bit of sleep, you need something.
Okay, so some of the sections of the Pennine Way, would be interested to hear your thoughts on north to south. So things like Crossfell, going north to south compared with south to north.
Oh, I think, with that. I just did it. Do you know, I just did Crossfell the other day because I was wrecking it from south to north. So actually I can compare them now. So let me think. So going south to north, you get a mushy ascent. It's a bit boggy going up and quite protracted. So that actually takes, it's quite a protracted slog from that direction. Mm-hmm. And then when you get up and over the other side, you're then onto the cobbly long, very long,
very long
road section, which I remember when I did the Fusion, that bit from Greg's Hut to Garrigill was probably the most soul-destroying descent I've ever done.
And you can see a lot of the way where you're going to be heading as well, can't you? You can see
it's ahead of you. Awfully depressing. Although in the winter spine, you don't see anything because it's dark all the time anyway, but... on sore feet, that descent is quite depressing. Mm-hmm. Whereas the other way, you've got a nice spongy, boggy descent, which is actually much nicer to run down than go up, I would say, and quick. Okay. So I think it's probably easier north to south, actually. Crossfell would be one section. The other one to think of would be Cauldron Snout, is it? Yeah. That one. Going down from north to south, it's a bit tricky, isn't it? It's a bit wet, slippy. But it's not a very long descent, so.
No, No. Okay. Okay. And what are your plans or what are your hopes for the spine, and how quicker do you think you could go over the Pennine Way?
No idea. The thing about the winter spine is that the weather makes huge difference. So, you know, I could want to do it faster, and I could be racing in much better condition. I could be stronger. I could do everything better, but it could still take me longer because of the weather. So, you know, if you have thigh deep snow for long sections, there's no way you're going to get a time, you know, under 100 hours. I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can't really say, oh, I'm going to do it this much quicker. I can do it better, but I don't think I can necessarily do it quicker unless the ground conditions are right and the weather conditions are right.
I mean, one piece of kit that I've seen you wearing quite a few times, Sabrina, is the poncho. And it seems like a great idea, but rarely taken up. Please discuss.
The poncho is a fantastic piece of equipment. I, like you say, I often don one. It's not just for fashion. It's actually quite practical. So what I like about my poncho is, well, you could spend thousands of pounds on a really lightweight Gore-Tex jacket, but it doesn't matter how expensive it is, how good it is, it gets wet all the way through. Poncho doesn't let any water in, but it also doesn't let any water out. But because it's quite baggy, it ventilates. And if you use it in the right way, you're not running in it particularly, you're not in it for very long. So what I do is I have it in a handy pocket on the outside of my rucksack. And you know when it's like you get those first little drops of rain, you might have that sort of 10-second warning before you get this deluge. Well, if you're just in your Gore-Tex, it's probably just going to go straight through that and all the way through and you soak your skin. If you're clever enough and quick enough to grab that poncho out, chuck it over yourself and over the top of your rucksack, so you don't even need to faff around with taking your rucksack off, you don't even need to stop. Then you get that poncho on, then that deluge comes. And then, you know, it might only last half an hour, 40 minutes. Brilliant. Take the poncho off, put it back in the pocket. Okay, that's harder than getting it out of the pocket. But that's it. Then you're dry. Then your Gore-Tex jacket's underneath and still dry. So you are still dry. Brilliant.
And that gives you such a boost.
Boost. And the other thing it does for me is I can get cold really quickly. And the poncho I found instantaneously, especially if you've just been running, you've got quite a lot of heat coming off you. You stick that poncho on, it traps all that heat and it can raise your, you know, the temperature inside there like 5 or more degrees very quickly. And just traps it in there. It's just, yeah.
That's great. Well, I look forward to seeing you hopefully on the spine when it happens. So soon after the spine, really, your thoughts, I know when, in fact, when I saw you at Annie's house at Garrigill, you were mentioning then about Wainwright's.
Oh, was I warbling on about Wainwright's already?
You were warbling on about it, but that's okay. That's okay.
I do.
Well, you're allowed to warble on it about it a little bit more here. So you finished it, and you were the first woman to finish Wainwright's.
Yes, there's all these sorts of controversies about the Wainwright run. Not that I'm too bothered. I just wanted to do this fun little journey around the hills, which I did. But a lot of people are very obsessed about records, and it's very important. But if you are going to, you know, take a record and you have your name or something, then you want to be deserving of it and have done it in a by the book way, if you see what I mean. Well, there is a book that tells you how you should be doing this, by the way. But I felt that, and probably this gets boring for people, it's certainly boring for me, but I had to lean on a lot of people to by the end, because my knee wouldn't, I had a knee injury, everything was swollen, leg wouldn't bend, and it's fine, it was fine going uphill, and it was okay on the flat, but if I was doing anything technical down steep stuff, if you can't bend your leg, actually it's the right trip hazard, than anything else, and you're a bit sleep deprived, you're a bit wobbly anyway. It was just a little bit dangerous, shall we say, to be wobbling around with a leg that wouldn't bend, and I already felt bad that I had continued this round being a bit crippled, that I didn't want to cause more disaster. So yeah, I needed some assistance to get down some of these things. So that's not the way to have a record. I certainly don't think I did it. It helped me in any speed whatsoever because I was in such a crippled state. I didn't want to claim it as a record, and I actually really just want to do it again. So it gives me a good excuse to do it again. Whereas if I already had a record, you know, some people would be like, well, why are you bothering again?
I mean, the thing from spending time with you on runs is that you actually love being out in the hills.
I do. Yeah, I just love it. Yeah.
And when we were on the Pennine Way for your FKT, you constantly said, I just want us all to have fun.
Yes. Yeah. It's the important thing. I think there are a lot of people that go out to do these things, and I think they seem to think that it's supposed to be a painful, miserable experience. And I think, well, some of these races, well, the Spine is labelled as Britain's most brutal race, you know. And I was like, well, why do you want to do the most brutal race? What's the attraction in that? I certainly didn't enter the Spine to do the most brutal race. I did the Spine because it sounded like fun. and I enjoyed, I actually did the summer version because I thought that's more fun. Why would you do the winter version? And then off the back of the summer version, you know, you get an entry. Yeah, I won the summer one, so I got an entry to the winter one. So I thought, well, okay, might as well try the winter one. Why not? And I really loved it, actually. And that's the thing. I think it is enjoyable. I do find these things enjoyable. And I think it should be. Maybe it's a question of just training to the right point where it's comfortable to do it. But I'm certainly not one of these people that has to have their head down and it's miserable and it's just about getting to the end. Because, you know, sometimes with these long distance races, you're not going to get to the end. Through no fault of your own, something happens. And what's the point if that whole, you didn't even achieve the end stage and the whole bit that you did do was miserable anyway?
Yeah, yeah. And I can vouch for that. You were a cheery soul from the Pennine Way. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Do you want to... We'll go on to the Pennine Way fastest known time. Do you want to give us some highlights, apart from obviously meeting me?
That was a highlight. So you were everywhere. You were at Middleton, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. I was like, right, I've got to get to Middleton so I can have a massage.
we did that. Any other highlights from that? Because it did seem like to us it was a fun trip.
Yes. What were the highlights of that? If there's one moment that just pins in my head, it's when I fell in a bog, like just completely face planted in this bog. It was just going out of it's Great Shunner on the way. I think it was on the way up. Great Shunner fell. I mean, who falls over going uphill? I mean, for God's sake. But yeah, so I just completely bathed in the bog.
Yeah.
And the best thing about that was that Claire Maxted, bless her, had picked my outfit for that leg. So I'd had fresh leggings on, white ones.
Why do I even own
white leggings? I do not know. But I'm never putting them in a box again, in my kit box, because that was silly. Because they weren't white, they were then brown. So that was quite funny, and we got a photo of that.
Yeah, I would like to see that photo. And I know the last section that we did from Wessenden, which is just behind me, up the corner, around the corner from me, and you ran from there back to Edale, and we had the sunrise over Kinder Plateau.
Oh yeah, wasn't that stunning?
It was
absolutely stunning. Yeah, you know, and I think that's why it took so long to get in, because I was just enjoying it. And Damien came up and brought me his bruised banana, which I still didn't want to eat after being offered it for the fifth time. Neither his salty nuts, but I did want that cup of tea. Cup of tea was definitely what was required.
Yeah, that's great. No, it was brilliant to support you on there, and yeah, it was good.
You had a good leg.
Yeah, and sorry for not letting you sleep earlier.
Oh.
Run, off you go.
Well, I thought, well, it's them who've got to suffer me in this state.
Yeah, Yeah, just to explain, Sabina wanted to go to sleep in a ditch, and you were shattered. You were shattered.
I'd have slept anywhere. Ditch would have been like probably the best option that I was looking at.
But we thought your support van was just around the corner. It is a bit further than just around the corner.
Yeah. So, I had another one this weekend. Was it a weekend? Sort of a weekend, yeah. From Paul Nelson. He came out to support me again. He's such a legend. Mm-hmm. And he just kept going, yeah, just another mile, Sabs. I'm busting to go to the loo or something. I needed something desperately. And he's saying, just none. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. A mile, I can deal with this thing that I need. But it was to eat something. So I'm like, I'm not going to eat just now. And they're like, anyway, of course, when you're not eating, you're going to get grumpy, aren't you? Because you're getting hangry. Then it's, so he's about half an hour ago, says, it's just another mile, Sabs. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. And then on the third time, it's just another mile, Sabs. I was like, Paul!
I'm convinced there's several Paul Nelsons because you do see him everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are thousands of them. Yeah, he's just boned himself.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So, bringing us on to yesterday and the few days before, tell us more about your, obviously, extensive planning went into this coast.
Yeah.
Off you go.
5 minutes, sort of, oh, damn it, the spine's postponed. I'm all fit and ready to do something. What shall I do? Oh, we can't go anywhere. Have to stay in tier two. Oh, yes, I've always wanted to race the Northern Traverse. I can never do it because it's in April and I want to do Wainwright's in May, so I can't do it next year. Oh, I'll just do that as a little fun run on my own. So that was what I decided to do. Looked, checked it out because, yeah, on a little map, saw it's all in tier two. Thought, yep, that's a goer. Then I thought, well, I probably could do with someone bringing a bit of food here and there. Maybe the old person running with me would be nice. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd just put a little post out on Facebook and see if anybody wanted to join in a bit of fun if they were in a tier two area nearby or local. Lots of people were happy to help. It was awesome. Good. What was best about this one? A lot of people, I didn't know them at all. Some of them not even friends of a friend or anything.
Right.
And it was awesome. They just come out, just come and run with me. And that's amazing because you run, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours with somebody you'd never met, mm-hmm. and you learn a lot about them.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting.
So, and just clarify, so did you do the Wainwright's route or did you do the Northern Traverse route?
No, they're very similar, to be fair. So, because James did base his race route on the Wainwright's route, he does slight detour to get to his checkpoints for, I don't know, so you could sleep in a village hall or something, I think. So obviously I didn't bother doing that. And then the one major difference is that, Wainwright did offer options, I think, in these, I haven't read these pictorial guides, oh my God, what better things to do. but he had an option that you can either go over the Lion and the Lamb, which are the hills on that descend into Grasmere. So I did them on the Wainwrights. It's Gibson Knot and Helm Crag.
Okay.
Or you can take a bridleway that descends into Easedale. Now that route would be much easier just to descend into Easedale. This is when you're coming over from, I've done Honister, didn't I? And you come up the Cumbrian Way and then you turn up towards Allscarf and you come around the back of that. And so it's just a way to get into Grasmere. And so Wainwright actually offered options on the route. But Mike Hartley is the only person we know of that had done this as a fastest known time.
Right.
And he apparently has said very clearly that you have to do that route, the Gibson Knot and the Helm Crag. So, you know, I was just like, oh, that's fine. That's better for me. It's a more interesting route. That's mm-hmm. good. I'll do that. And then there are a few other places where now, since Wainwright did it, there are new footpaths in place.
Right.
Whereas he used the roads. So for James's race, obviously to keep people off roads, if there's a footpath version, that would be the better way. But Wainwright didn't use them because they weren't in existence. And Mike therefore used these road options. Being me, I really was not bothered by the particulars of the route. But for other people who would like me to do a record or a fastest known time, it's to follow a route that is prescribed by a prior record holder would be cleaner.
Right.
So I tried to do as best I could Mike Hartley's route. I think I did execute it. It's a bit fiddly in some places, but I think we did try to follow the route exactly that he took. So there you are.
Yeah, that's interesting because I'm doing the Northern Traverse, hopefully, in April. Right. Looking forward to the routes. Yeah, it looks stunning.
Yeah.
Could you tell me about some of the highlights that you had on the route?
Yeah, so I have to tell you, I will try not to be so downplay part of the route. The route from...
Well, the highlights then, rather than the lowlights.
Yeah, but I just got to tell you about it. So St. Bees to Richmond. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Obviously, coming across the Lake Street is amazing. And there are little paths that I've never done before. So it's absolutely stunning over that side. You know, I don't go over there. It's far away. Mm-hmm. So you get a nice little run northwards across St. Bees. And so you can look out to the sea. It was beautiful. We had a sunrise over. It was just gorgeous. And then you turn in and start heading up a few. Well, you go over Dent, which is a little yep. hill, and I'd never been that way either. And that's quite pretty. And then you come through Ennerdale, bit of forest section, which is nice. And then you come up. You don't go too high actually, but you've got the hills around you as you come up towards Honister. And you get an amazingly nice descent into Honister. Actually, that was probably my favourite bit of running,
right.
That descent into Honister, possibly because Storm Bella was shoving me along. I think I was doing about 15 kilometres an hour. Yeah, we were going pretty quick. So it wasn't a glitch in the tracker, that was genuine.
Yeah, you had tasty weather.
Well, that's where it started. I actually thought the weather was going to be far worse than it was. So when you mentally prepare yourself for the most horrendous thing ever, and it is horrendous, then it doesn't seem so bad. Mm. You know, it's horrendous, but not really, really horrendous. So so the wind had picked up, I knew it was going to be behind me, so it kind of pushed me into Ennerdale. So up until then, it was dry, hadn't even really rained. Then it started to spit a little. And as I turned up the Cumbrian Way, so once you come through Honister and you go onto the Cumbrian Way and follow it up, through Rothwaite, Seatoller, and then you head up, towards like High Rays and all that. That's when it started to rain and get cold, and the wind.
Poncho? No poncho?
So, one thing I'd say about the poncho is that if it's absolutely blowing a hoonie, trying to get it out is going to be, and then it really needs to go under the rucksack. If it's okay. Blowing really hard, but it wasn't raining hard enough, but the wind was very severe, so the poncho was not the one to go for right then. So anyways, over there we then head to what I was talking about, the Lion and the Lamb, and the wind was superb, and I felt a bit sorry for Scott, who decided very kindly to come and meet me. He was going to pick me up from Grasmere because I had no support booked for Grasmere to Patterdale. Mm-hmm. I was going to do that section solo, but he'd seen that he wanted to come and help me. But rather than just wait for me in Grasmere, he decided to come up Helmcrack. I bet that was horrible going that way because we were being pushed around big time, falling over. Yeah, it was hard to stand up. But I was glad I was being pushed in the right direction. Anyway, so that was fine. Made that, and then into Grasmere. And you know what? Another highlight. As I was running on the road into Grasmere, I had little purple writing on the road saying "Go Sabs," and a bit further along, another little picture of a woman running.
Are you sure this wasn't sleep deprivation?
It wasn't hallucinations, although. Yeah, we'll have to get Lucy Noble to confirm. I think she drew them.
Oh, that's great. These little moments along route, it's a spine or whatever it is, are great, aren't they? And they give you such a pickle.
It was such a boost. That was really nice. Yeah. And also to know I wasn't going out on the next leg on my own, which is going to be dark, to be fair. Mm-hmm. But again, got to feel sorry for Scott because he probably had No, the second worst batch of weather on the trip. Because as we went up to Grisdale Tarn, the wind was really severe. And he brought Froigie, his collie.
Right.
Poor Froigie kept finding patches of ice.
Get in.
I swear he would like turn around and look at me like I'd pushed him over. Yeah, he'd be going, he would give me this look. I was like, it wasn't me, it was the wind.
So in these challenging times, it doesn't sound like you're digging deep. You're just enjoying.
I think the weather's quite... I mean, it gives you something to remember, doesn't it, if the weather's terrible or weird. And it's quite funny, I think, when you're falling over. As long as you know you're not going to die, you know.
Yeah, that's hopeful. That's hopeful. Yeah. So, going through when you were coming towards the end and coming towards Robin Hood Bay, I'm sure I was watching the dot and lots of other people were watching the dot and thinking how close you were cutting it, and you were clawing back time in those last couple of hours. Looked like your target yourself.
Yeah, my random target.
Your random target was slipping. But tell me a little bit about how you dig and how you get more from yourself at those times.
I think,
like you say, it is a random target. It's only you that set it.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is probably at home you're looking at these splits thinking it's something I'm trying to actually achieve. But when I wrote the schedule in all the 5 minutes I spent writing it, remember, it's not like the Wainwrights. I didn't know every inch of section of the course. I didn't know how long it took. I had no idea. Like you can look at a map and you can look, okay, is it road? Is it bridleway? Is it footpath? And make a guesstimate about how fast you can go along there. And you've got to take into account the weather. So now the lake section, the prediction for the weather was really severe for Storm Bella. As I said, I was expecting it to be a lot worse. I was also expecting to have a heavy dump of snow on me on Kidsley Pike. Mm-hmm. So I gave myself a lot more time to get through that section. So the reason it looked like I was, you know, 5 or 6 hours ahead of schedule at one point and it was amazing, I was doing really well, it's actually just that the weather wasn't as bad as I had thought it might be. It was bad, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't it wasn't thigh deep snow anywhere. And then the opposite happened. So I had looked at Shap section, Orton Fells. Hey, it's pretty flat, it's a lot of road, and I didn't think about the fact that these roads in Storm Bella had actually got flooded. Right. So we were wading through water. I mean, you can't see a path, fields full of water, you don't know where the path is, mud up to your knees, and then the roads completely flooded. So my husband actually had run up Kidsley Pike with me and was running down to somewhere, Burnbanks or something, to collect Scott's van, and he couldn't even drive the van through because the roads were too flooded.
Wow.
So this is how much water had come down. So all of that next 24 hours, everything was so waterlogged that the lovely looking flat stuff was horrendous.
Right.
All these fields were boggy. So it was really slow. So that completely sapped me trying to wade through bog. So I lost loads of time over those sections. Okay. Without having thought about the fact that they were going to be bad. And then the next night, everything started to freeze. So there was ice everywhere. And even through Monday, there was ice on the roads. So again, you're thinking you can just run down this road. There's ice everywhere. So actually you can't. You need to be really careful. It's really slow. So a lot of the times just got dragged out in those last sections because of the ground conditions. So the weather was great. It was sunny and still, but the ground conditions were appalling, as slow as you can get, really. But I did pick up my pace, yes, in the last few hours, because I don't know why. Yeah, I was feeling quite good. I'd eaten well. I'd managed myself okay. I was in a good place and I wanted to finish and get in. So yeah. I managed to push a little bit more out.
I mean, obviously you do look after yourself very well, you know, when you're on the hill, when you're in the races and you've got, is there any tips you could give to people who are kind of new to ultra running? Because one of the things I noticed, obviously having seen you at the Spine and on the Pennine Way, was your foot care, your feet were pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I was really good this time, actually. I didn't have any sores. I don't have any blisters. Not a single problem with my feet right now. I wear waterproof socks. That's the only way. I honestly can't contemplate how you could do these things without waterproof socks. The ones I get are from Deckshell. They've brought out the ones I used to use, they've stopped making, which actually frustrates me, the Bamboo Light. But they've actually brought out a new one, Compression Mudder, which is what I use this time. They're really good.
And they're long.
They're long, yeah. Do not wear waterproof socks that don't go up to your knees, because for things like this, at some point, you're going to go in water above the sock line. And if you do that, then you're going to end up with a swimming pool on your foot, because the water is going to go in and it is not coming out. So you've got to have them up to your knee. They're fantastic. So not only does it keep the water out, but also grit, mud, you know, because if normal socks, you can get a little bit of mud and a little bit of dirt in there, that will rub in between the toes and cause rubs and blisters eventually, and just be uncomfortable. And it also makes it much faster to get changed. Like if you can take your socks off and you don't have to wash or dry them, you put another pair of socks on, happy days. Although I have to say, I only changed my socks once this time because they were dry inside. Yeah. Despite how much water I went through, they stayed dry. And that's the key to keeping your feet in good condition, I think, for these long races. As well, of course, of having a comfortable pair of shoes that fit. And you probably want something a little bit wider than, you know, you don't want a shoe that you can only just get on, because your feet are going to swell. Whoever you are, whatever you do, your feet will swell during a race. So something with a little bit of room in is good. So comfortable shoes, comfortable socks. If you do get any rubs, it's best to address them right away rather than wait till they're agonizingly painful and then you've got a problem that you can't fix. If you get a blister during a race, my way would be just to pop it with a needle and that's it. Put your sock back on, job done. If I get them, which is really rare, but while training, I leave them to rub and rub and rub and the skin thickens and then you don't get another blister there again.
Right. But these things obviously work for you. I think something else that I've come across as a cross between people doing long runs and then doing multi-day events is running at night. And personally, I find hours between kind of 3 and 5 tricky the most difficult time. Have you got any experience of?
I think I'm just so backwards. Sometimes my worst time is between 7 and 8 in the morning, and right. I don't know why, but I think that's when I sleep my deepest at home. Just right. Before I wake up, it's my deepest hour of sleep. So I think that's generally the problem for me, that 6, 7, 8 in the morning, that time. But yeah, obviously sunrise comes up, it wakes you up. So, you know, that's good. I do get sleepy and then, I mean, my sleep on this one, some people have already asked me what my sleep tactic was. People like to know these things. I had written my schedule. I had not thought about at all where I wanted to sleep. I thought I'd just deal with it on the day. So again, that wasn't in the schedule. No sleep time was in the schedule. So I took an hour at Richmond and I was desperate for it at that point. In fact, I would have slept before then, the stop before Reith, or even Keld, but it was daylight. Right. And I did not want to waste, only had 8 hours of daylight. I didn't want to waste a second of it sleeping. So I even got to Richmond and I think it was about 3:45 in Richmond. And I was like, I really, really want to sleep, but I've got 15 minutes more of daylight. So I'm just going to push on a little bit further. So we parked somewhere just a bit further down the road so that I wouldn't waste the daylight. But I was very tired and I needed it. And
do you find such a big difference between your daylight speed and night speed? Or does it depend on terrain?
Depends on terrain. But, you know, you want to look around. You want to see stuff. You don't want to be asleep when it's daylight. It's more pleasurable. Other people around you are happier. You can talk about stuff you can see. Although I was spoilt because we had a full moon.
Yes.
Oh my God, it was gorgeous. Beautiful. And we could even turn the head torches off on Sunday night and run along this. Oh, this was trying to not tell you, but there's a long section of road in between Richmond and Ingleby Arncliffe.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of road. And the only thing that breaks up the road is boggy fields. But the good thing about that is you're so glad to get off a boggy field that you're like, oh, road again. Yay, road. It's not boggy field. And then you're bored of the road and you go, oh, boggy field. I don't know. What's worse, boggy field or road? But it's not a long section, actually. It just feels long because, it's not too pleasant. But
if someone is running through the night for the first time, is there any... Did you train yourself to be able to run through the night? Or was it just... For me, it's just been something that's come through practice.
Yeah, I think that's all you can really do. I mean, it's from the adventure racing. We're always on the clock. And as a team, we'd have to make decisions about when and where and sleep and how long for and how it would adversely affect our time versus the benefit of sleeping and do you get faster? And there's all these questions. And I think I'm the type of person, I push it too much, actually, the sleep deprivation.
I would say so.
Yeah. but I gave myself one whole hour at Richmond to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so much better for it afterwards. Yeah. I was so much better for it. I'm now thinking I should have maybe had a little bit of time on that first night because of how bad the weather was, how much I'd been smashed about.
Yeah.
Maybe I could have taken half an hour just to reset. Mm-hmm. And I also didn't realize until I stopped at Richmond how bad my asthma was, because obviously it was very cold, the air was cold. But when I lay my, I don't even think I slept in Richmond, to be fair, but I lay down. And the reason I couldn't sleep is because my rest break was like 60 to 90 breaths a minute. It was horrendous. And it was noisy. It was like a train was in there with me. But what it allowed is that after that hour of lying down, my rest break was not normal, but nearer normal. And so I felt a lot better.
Right.
I just felt like I'd reset. So what I did after that, I had 10 minutes sleep or lie down three more times through that night,
mm-hmm.
which is, I thought, quite a lot for me. But it just helped keep the asthma under control.
Right.
I wasn't zombieing.
You could move quicker.
Yeah, and I never got to that point that I did in with you.
Yeah.
Never got to the point of falling asleep on my feet and being ludicrous.
And you said you couldn't keep your eyelids open.
I never got to the point of wanting to peel my eyelids off my face, yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah, it's good.
Thank you for your time. You must be absolutely shattered after your last few days' effort. But I'm going to ask you straight away the question that probably everyone would expect me to ask is, what's next?
Oh, right. Well, the last time someone asked me that, I said sleep, because that was yesterday.
Well, you've done that now. So what next?
we all know I'm doing the Wainwrights again in May, right? So that's that. If Spine is on in February, I'll be doing that. I am booked into Cape Wrath, but I have to get it around my head how to do Wainwrights, have 2 weeks rest, and then do Cape Wrath.
Yeah.
Is that possible? Well, might be.
Well, there wasn't a big gap between Wainwrights and the Pennine Way FKT this year, was there?
That was 6 weeks, wasn't it?
Was it? 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah, not very long.
July to September. So yeah. That might even be 8 weeks. Yeah, a bit more than 2 weeks though, isn't it?
Ages. So those are the challenges you've got ahead. It's really been 2020 has been, as well as COVID year, it's been FKT year.
FKT, yep.
So can you see that continuing next year?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I mean, it's so easy. You can just hire a tracker from James from Open Tracking and go off and do a fun challenge. And then you don't have to worry about this, that, and the other. I mean, we'll always want to do races because it's the social element of it. You know, where, yeah, it's great, isn't it, to meet up and chat about it and run it together, run parts of the race together, and then when you finish it, all celebrate it and just live that moment a bit longer. You know, we'll never get away from that. But in the meantime, I'm sure these little challenges, FKTs, are going to keep us busy. And there's so many to go at.
Yeah, there's. But I think people, I think it was Damien Hall said he wanted to do FKTs that meant something as well. That they meant something. It wasn't an FKT around your kitchen table. You know, you had to do, you know, significant FKT.
Oh, I see. Right. Oh, like running around your kitchen table 10 times.
Yeah.
I got you. Yes. Yeah. Well, yes. Well, it should be. It's the route, isn't it? I like the fact that they're linear. I like linear routes. I like discovering things. And do you know what? There is. The one I'm going to do at some point is called Sabrina Way. Did you know there's a Sabrina Way? I was walking around the Cotswolds somewhere, or running, I think.
It's got your name all over it.
Yeah. And I saw the signpost saying Sabrina. I've never heard of this way. And I thought one day I shall do this track. So I'll have to figure out where it goes, how long it is, and a bit about it, and then I shall go and run it.
That's super. Well, you've heard it here first. Sabrina Way. Yeah. That's great. Well, thank you very, very much for your time.
I'm sorry, yeah. It was so disjointed.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And but well done. And I hope you've got lots more FKTs in you, but lots of races. Let's do some races.
Yeah, let's do some racing.
That's good. Well, thank you very much. Thank you.